Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for joining us. What a way to clear a room, put rules in the title of your panel, and everybody leaves. I promise you it's going to be very entertaining and very exciting. So we're here to talk about how you balance brand integration with sticking to the rules and making sure we don't get into trouble with Ofcom. So I'm Claire Prince. I'm head of brand and entertainment at Essence MediaCom, where we make a whole host of branded entertainment programmed across linear and digital, and I would like my guests on the panel to introduce themselves. So, Laura.
Hi there, I'm Laura Hobson. I work at United Talent Agency in the Entertainment, Culture and Marketing Department with 15 years of experience in prop and product placement.
And Dwayne?
Hello there, I'm Dwayne Debman from Reviewed and Cleared. Reviewed and Cleared are a group of content lawyers and compliance practitioners, and I help advertisers, streamers, broadcasters and production companies with all their compliance needs. Before that, I worked a whole host of UK-based broadcasters like UK TV, Sky and BT Sport, working on AFPs and product placement deals.
And Diana.
Hi, I'm Diana Izzard. I'm head lawyer, commercial compliance at Channel 4. I've got about 20 years experience in the broadcast industry, advising internally and production companies, online and digital, on all compliance issues and legal issues related to content.
Excellent. So there's lots of different words used when we talk about branded entertainment. It's AFP, AFE, BFE, branded content, branded entertainment. And there can be a lot of confusion, and there's quite a lot of grey areas as well. So I thought what would be really useful at the start is to clarify what we mean in branded entertainment. So Laura, can you just briefly explain the difference between prop placement and product placement, please? And give some examples if you can.
Yeah. So prop placement is giving free props for a production to make a set look realistic. So when you're watching something, everything should be where it should be because you're sitting in your kitchen. You should have a Smeg fridge maybe and a KitchenAid on the side. And when you open the fridge, there's actual products in your fridge rather than an empty fridge. So with prop placement, it's a bit like PR. There's no guarantees it's going to be in there, but you can give them free branded props to help make something look realistic. And you can do that across the BBC, Netflix, et cetera, et cetera. And then you've got product placement, which is where you pay contractually to be in a show. There's certain guarantees that take place, but everything is regulated by the Ofcom regulations.
And so with prop placement, you don't know how your product's going to show up, right? You just give it to them and it can be used in however way they deem fit.
Yes, within restriction. You still sign clearance forms. You're still aware of what the scenes may be. But yes, because there's no guarantees. It's a hope and pray, but it's based on good relationships that you get your props in there.
Great. And when it comes to linear AFP, so ad-funded programming, Diana, can you give a definition of what that is exactly, please?
So it's where a product or service basically includes their, it's funded basically by the brand. And ultimately, they pay for it. So they are either fully funded or part funded. And you have sponsorship credits in and around the content, whether they're integrated or standalone credits. And anything, if the funder is referred to within the content, then that would be considered as product placement.
And a couple of recent examples on Channel 4?
Couple of recent examples, New Model Agency with M&S, and also Bangers with eBay.
That's an excellent show if you haven't seen it.
It is indeed.
Excellent. So there is a section in the Ofcom guidelines that specifically outlines all the rules and regulations around branded entertainment, what you can and can't do with a brand. And that is in section 9, if you want to double check that we're all referencing accurately. So Dwayne, I'm going to come to you, and it would be great if you can sort of explain a little bit more about that. So it, Section 9 relates to the broadcasters and producers' editorial independence and control over programming, with a distinction between editorial content and advertising. Do you think that the rules in Section 9 are really clear, or do you think that they can be a little bit ambiguous?
I think it's a mixed bag, to be honest, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. So taking one at a time, so in terms of the distinction between editorial airtime and advertising airtime, I think the rules are pretty clear for good reason. Ofcom state that if a programme is sponsored, you need to relay to viewers that it is sponsored via sponsorship credits, as Diana said. And there are rules around what you can say and can't say in sponsorship credits. So, for instance, you can't have any calls to action, you can't have any advertising messages. And that's simply because sponsorship credits sit in editorial airtime and not commercial airtime. And I know I'm teaching my grandmother to suck eggs for some of the audience, but broadcasters are restricted to the volume of advertising minutage they can show in any clock hour. And that's why sponsorship credits can't contain any calls to action, go to call this number now, or any advertising messages. And advertising messages are things kind of counterintuitively, which mean that if you can prove something, a strap line, then you can't include it in a sponsorship credit. So if Tesco has Every Little Helps, there's no evidence that I could ask Tesco for to prove that statement is true. It's a piece of puffery, advertising puffery. But if Tesco chose to include a strap line saying something like, the UK's number one supermarket, then clearly that's quantifiable, either through footfall or sales volumes. So because I can ask them for that evidence, that means they can't have it in a sponsorship credit. Similarly, for product placement, you have to notify viewers that a programme contains product placement by utilising a P logo before, during and after a show. So I think the distinction between editorial and advertising is clear for good reason. In terms of editorial control, I think that does get a bit murkier. It's right and proper that broadcasters have editorial control of the programmes. After all, Ofcom issues a licence to each and every one, allowing them to broadcast. And if they foul up consistently or severely, then Ofcom can revoke that licence. So I think it's right that broadcasters have editorial control. It becomes murkier when we're talking about advertiser-funded programmes, because the guidance notes for Section 9, which aren't available on Ofcom's website at the moment because they're under revision, but they still, I think, are still live in terms of we still adhere to them. The guidance says that advertisers in AFPs can influence the editorial of the content. And that means they could come up with the format, or they could come up with the talent or access or locations, et cetera, et cetera. But the buck must stop with the broadcaster. So if a compliance person believes that it compromises the code, then the broadcaster has every right to say no. If it compromises the editorial integrity of the channel, or it doesn't match the ethos or values of the channel, then the broadcaster again can say no. The very ambiguous one, and I'm sure we'll get onto this in more detail, is around the thorny issue of undue prominence and editorial justification. And from my point of view, I think it's good that it's ambiguous, because consider the alternative, I guess, that if Ofcom were to prescriptively say that for a 30-minute show, you can have three references for a sponsored reference or a product placement, or six references in an hour-long show, then that doesn't offer any creativity or interpretation of the code. And of course, it doesn't take into circumstances like the specifics of the format, the channel, the audience, et cetera, et cetera. So on the whole, I think they're clear. And when they're not clear, I think it's advantageous for broadcasters and advertisers alike.
Great. So you mentioned their editorial justification, and that's something that comes up a lot in the world of branded entertainment. There's often quite a lot of tension between commissioners. I'm just trying not to look at the broadcasters in the room. Commissioners and broadcasters and production, and then agencies and brands around what is and what isn't editorially justified, because essentially that is with the eye of the beholder, I'd say, and you may be able to justify many things. So do you feel, I'm going to ask Diana, that maybe commissioners and broadcasters sometimes hide behind this rule or this ambiguous line of it's not editorially justified, we can't have your brand there. Do you think that that is true?
We do everything to avoid that situation. So from the outset, we meet with the producer, we have a member of legal compliance, a legal compliance advisor or a lawyer present, whoever's been allocated to that programme, just like any other commission. So branded entertainment is just as important for us that we... right from the get-go, work out what verbal and visual references they are going to be there. Ultimately, one, to make sure that everybody is aware that the channel has final editorial control, which is really important as required under the code, that the programme has integrity. Viewers find that if the brand or the product or service doesn't fit naturally within the content, then it jars and it ultimately puts them off watching. And I think for us, it's really crucial that our value is aligned with the brand and also the editorial goals of the programme. So from the right get-go, we work out what they are, whether it's one verbal, one visual or whatever it is, and how it will be integrated.
So we know that rules are there, obviously, to protect the viewer, but they're also there, as you said, Diana, to ensure that the shows are watchable. We know that there's a difference between linear and digital. Maybe, Laura, do you want to talk about some of the rules between, is there a difference and what is one better than the other? Do you feel that linear is going to move more towards digital or vice versa with regulation?
So a lot of the Ofcom regulations, so now Netflix take on the Ofcom regulations, which is really important. I think the linear broadcasters are really happy that that's happened. It makes it a bit more of a level playing field because there's some interesting topics that come up. So I think it's important that there's some rules in
place. Is that just Netflix UK's? Sorry, that's that question.
It's definitely Netflix.
Okay,
I can't be sure of everything else.
We can check that out.
Yeah, you can check that. But yeah, I think they're really important rules to have. I think the sort of undue prominence is also a really important rule because as British people watching TV, the last thing they want is to have a brand shoved down their throat. And I think these rules really make it feel fair and just and natural. Ultimately, you don't want to be watching a show and all you can see is the brand constantly front place, especially if it's not meant to be there.
Yeah,
you know, it's editorially unjustified to be there.
Yeah,
I think it makes a bad TV experience.
Yeah, definitely. I will add, I forgot to say at the start, if any of you have any questions, please go on to the Advertising Week app and put them in the question function. That would be great, thank you. So I'd love to get into some examples, talk about some things that have happened maybe over the last year, 18 months in this world. I'd love to know what you think makes a successful piece of branded entertainment and why, and how do you sort of gauge its success? Is it viewing figures? Is it the specific ROI that the brand are looking for? Is it the fact that it's recommissioned and they do it again? There's multiple ways, I think, to gauge the success of branded entertainment. So maybe Dwayne, do you want to talk about that first?
Sure. I think generally how you can gauge the success of an advertiser-funded programme is that right from the get-go, people understand what the commercial and editorial goals are. And if you start from that basis and maintain those relationships, both internally at the broadcasters and the media agencies and at the advertisers, and you cross-fertilize that knowledge, you know, there's some education to be done from the advertiser to the broadcaster and vice versa. I think in general, that is a sound, successful campaign, that the goals editorially have been achieved. You've met the target demographic that you wanted to show the program at. The advertiser's happy because it's either got its ROI or it's changed its perception of the brand, if that's what its aim was to get into bed with a broadcaster and an AFP in the first place. So I think that's the overall success. I don't have any specific examples in the last year, 18 months, which arguably tells its own story since I've not been at a broadcaster for the last 4 years, because these queries kind of don't really come up. my way. Now, whether that's a kind of a damning thing to say about AFPs, and I know ITV and certainly Channel 4 do a very good job in terms of, you know, showing lots of AFPs and utilising the rules very creatively. But I think that would be a degree of success. Selfishly, from a compliance point of view, when I was at a broadcaster, I would always measure success as what's Ofcom's interest in it. And if they don't have any impact with a regulator or no direct viewer complaints, that was a success. And that sounds flippant, but it doesn't. I don't mean it to sound flippant, because as Diana's kind of alluded to, that if the editorial integration of a brand is so seamless and is natural within the structure of the format, then arguably you're not going to get any regulatory intervention or viewer complaints. So I think overall that's a measure of success for AFPs, for both the channel editorially and the advertiser commercially.
So not getting a knock on the door from Ofcom is a measure of success for an AFP.
Well, as I said, I deliberately said that flippantly, because from my point of view, that is a measure of success.
Yeah.
But the serious point is that the reason why you're not going to get a knock on the Ofcom door or from Ofcom on your front door is because the brand has been integrated seamlessly within the format. And the reason for that is hopefully early on, as Diana's alluded to, you broach the subject, you have frank and full conversations with the advertiser, the media agency, the commissioning editor about what are your goals. And once that alignment has been agreed upon, even before, you know, talent's been cast, studios have been booked, I think you're on a very good, sound basis for a successful campaign.
And Diana, would you agree, or do you think there's other measures of success or failure, maybe, in this
success
area?
Success, for me, wouldn't be whether we have a Ofcom adjudication or not, investigation. I never like those. The thing that is the best is when you have a happy client, partnerships are happy, so are commissioning, and then that subsequently makes everybody happy at the end of the day. And it is really, like I said before, making sure at the start everybody understands that integration and the way it will be integrated, and it's really quite granular. And what I really encourage is that it's looked at right from the very start, like I said. So, and if that is achieved and it is integrated seamlessly, then we're all winners, really.
So I just want to pick up on a point that you made there. There are multiple stakeholders.
It's not easy. No.
So you have obviously the brand, often the agency, you have commissioning, you have production, and then you have commercial teams at the broadcaster, obviously legal, compliance. There's a lot of people who need a seat at the table in order to make something like this happen and then also make it a success. What's really interesting is that people come to these projects with very different ideas of what success is. You know, they even call them different things. So a producer and a commissioner would call it a TV show or a series, whereas a marketing director may call it a campaign. And therefore, they're looking at the same thing and through completely different lenses. How do you ensure at the very start, when you all get in a room together, that all stakeholders are made aware of what they're going into if they want something different from it? Laura, do you want to answer that first, and we'll go.
Yeah. So as I sit more on the brand side, but with my knowledge of television, it's quite good to be the middleman, to sort of be in the middle, similar to what you do, obviously, and make sure that everyone's happy and really understand the process. And I think that's what we do. It's finding the great relationships, having that chemistry with the right production company, so you're all starting off on the right foot. I think that's the most important. And then when it comes to the detail, you know, sometimes brands want to be on set as well, which is lovely. Then they realise how boring it is. That's also lovely. And then, yeah, it's also them being aware of everything that's happening. I think that's just so important.
And how do you explain that it's a different, talking about shoots, that it's different to, say, an ad, shooting an ad campaign?
They're not in charge.
Yeah. So there's often tension there where they want to feed into what's going on.
Or turn up with loads more branding than, you know, what's you would ever see even if you walked into a shop. So that's where, you know, Duane and I worked together on Top Model back in the day, and you know, it's leveling out what feels comfortable, natural, without it getting to the point where it looks ridiculous and you know, then no one wants to watch the show.
Exactly. And it's that integrity, that editorial integrity is the reason why, you know, and it's something we talk about at Essence MediaCon with our clients, is you enter into doing brand and entertainment because you're leaning on the editorial integrity of the program makers, of the broadcasters. And the minute you sort of take away that integrity, it's you're losing the magic of what you've gone into this for. Would you agree, Diana?
100%. Integrity is key. And also, you want the viewer to be engaged. I think there are two things that the commissioner will always push. And also, if it doesn't have that, it pretty much falls apart. It's when the brand gets too much involved that we end up a situation where it doesn't feel natural. It's really forced. Then it sort of goes back to my first point. The viewer's not going to be engaged and entertained. And it's just fundamentally crucial that we do that. And I think it's also just laying down from the start that, you know, you're putting your trust in the channel, and the commissioning editor knows what they're doing. You know, they do this time and time again. They do. And it doesn't matter from them whether there's a brand involved and your product placing or whether there isn't. They are going to do their best to deliver the best content they can. So, and that is part of Legal Compliance Mantra as well, is that, you know, we want to find solution to creative problems or challenge us. You know, if you want something integrated differently, let's all meet in a room and discuss it. And it's an evolving process. It's not just that kickoff meeting at the start. And I think we do that with all commissions, whether it's branded entertainment or news and current affairs. You always have someone who is working on that program, and our mission is the same, to make the best content.
Right. So clear communication throughout of what everyone's expectations are, and constantly referencing back why you're all a part of it.
Sure.
Great. Yeah. So we've got a few questions through. Is an increase in AFP an opportunity to innovate? Is there still room for new exciting ways for brands to integrate into the entertainment of AFPs? That's interesting. So we haven't actually spoken about the future. And we did sort of briefly talk about, I'd just like to bring up the sort of digital side of brands and entertainment as well, and how those rules differ and the future. So maybe we can talk about that. Diana, do you want to?
Yeah, sure. So how we work at the channel, obviously we have the Ofcom rules for linear, and then there's the on-demand rules, the Ofcom rules. They're a little bit more lenient because you can product place HFSS gambling and alcohol on streaming. For digital, you know, that there's the Online Safety Act that's coming into effect, but that basically regulates the platform and the search engine. So it wouldn't regulate the content. So how we look at things at Channel 4 is that, look, we've got brand reputation here, so we need to make sure there's common accepted standards across the board. And what we do have is our digital guidelines, which are, again, having that equal playing field. And what we do is make sure there's consistency. We want brands to trust what we do and know that we'll deliver great content regardless whether it's linear or digital. Our jobs get so much easier in the legal compliance team if it's seamless integration. And I bang on about that a lot. But if that's achieved, then the compliance bit is actually really easy.
Great. We got a nice prop placement question here for you, Laura. Juicy. What examples of prop placement have surprised you the most in terms of undue prominence?
I think the answer to that is cars. I think it's really hard on a BBC drama to not have a detective driving around, going to a crime scene. Normally how they work it is they'll have lots of different car brands to make it
They're always very
fair.
Clean as well, aren't they?
Spotless and brand new, considering. but yeah, that's the biggest one, because they're so crucial to a scene.
Yeah.
You need them to get from A to B. It also looks great in a high-speed race. So they're great examples. And the undue prominence, you can get away with it with different car brands, but if there's one detective the whole series,
you've got to
beat
minds,
the other brands.
Or do you think they just accept it?
I think if it looks good and it makes sense. I mean, not all the cars will be brand new prop place cars, because if the character hasn't got a very high powered job, it would look weird if they were driving around in a very expensive car. But yeah, I think luxury normally makes it look the best.
Great. So this is actually looking at comparing the Ofcom regs to global markets. So, Dwayne, this is a question for you, I think. So comparing to other global markets, are the current Ofcom regulations holding our industry back? This is interesting because I think it's quite well known that Ofcom regs are the strictest, most stringent in the world.
That's probably a fair comment, but I think the reason for that is the way that kind of television, commercial television, and, you know, came about in this country in 1955. It wasn't the American market where brands were involved in the production and making of shows from day one. So I think that's probably the reason. I think Ofcom could do us all a favour, all stakeholders, by publishing the guidance notes following the research. They undertook research and published it in December 2022, and the research was there to kind of give Ofcom, perhaps, the freedom to liberate some of the guidance notes. But, I'm not dissing Ofcom, but they have had that research for 18 months, close to 18 months now. And if they do offer us all a ray of light in terms of liberalising some aspects of the guidance notes for Section 9, then it would be great to publish that. I don't have any insight about when this might happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if it happened to coincide with the draft consultation for the new VOD code next year. January to March next year is their scheduled timetable for that. So I think that would be of benefit to us. In terms of damaging the marketplace, I suppose, to be provocative in the last 4 or 5 minutes, arguably, are broadcasters fully exploiting the rules at the moment? So, for instance, there's nothing in the rules to prevent an advertiser being incorporated into the programme name. I rarely see that, if at all. The undue prominence rule, are we doing enough? If there's really, really robust editorial justification for a product to be featured, product placement or sponsor, then are we following that through with being duly prominent as opposed to unduly prominent? There's a big question mark around that. I don't watch a lot of AFPs, but the one or two that I do enjoy as a family to sit down and watch, I sometimes, internally, my family don't like it, but when I externalise this, I do wonder why there's not more branding on aprons or products or carrier bags, which would fit naturally with the sponsors' interests and services. So I think that's my initial answer to that very good question, I think.
Wonderful. So we've just got 1 minute just to sort of summarise and wrap up. So what I've taken from this, Dwayne, you think there could be more branding in shows? Excellent.
I think there's an opportunity.
There's always more room for branding in shows. Laura, regarding undue prominence, the only time it's a problem is cars, but we don't mind it because they look nice and people have got to get from A to B. Yep. And Diana, it's that editorial integrity that always must stay at the fore and essentially trust the experts, right?
Definitely.
So that's, you know, you are very set up at Channel 4, and I know ITV are as well, in understanding what agencies and clients want to get from these deals and from these projects. So understanding what everyone's trying to get from it, but maintaining the editorial integrity from the commissioners and the broadcasters to make sure that the programmes that you're making are excellent and people want to watch them.
Trust the content.
Yeah. Wonderful. So thank you very much to my panellists and thank you all for being here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. Stay connected with us on social media using the handle @AdvertisingWeek and visit our website europe.advertisingweek.com for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcanda, the audio conference solution.